The following audiobook contains AI-generated content and may contain errors. MyAudiobooks.ai presents Blind Sector. Calder Ives stopped the harbor's auto pass with his thumb at 5:30 in the morning, late autumn of 2037, while Saltgate's north control tower shuddered in the wind off the strait. One press would have let the system certify itself. One press would have turned the Eastern Channel green before most of the city had finished its first coffee. Calder kept his thumb on the cold glass and read the small warning beside the button again, though he knew every word. Manual confirmation recommended only for adverse weather, recent physical strike, unresolved maintenance variance, or operator discretion. Operator discretion. The phrase sat there with a bureaucrat's neat little hands folded in its lap. Beyond the tower glass, the narrow strait ran black under a low ceiling of cloud. Rain came sideways in pinpricks. The harbor cranes stood braced over the container yards, cables drawn tight, and the first reopening convoy waited beyond the breakwater, with its navigation lamps dulled by mist. On Calder's left screen, the transit board woke line by line. Western approach, green. Customs pier, green. Quarantine berth, green. Eastern shoal array, green. Then gray. Then green again, as if the machine had blinked. On his tablet, a red notice from the municipal benefits office waited above the maintenance queue. Final cancellation warning for Agnes Ives. Employment-linked medical coverage subject to suspension upon payroll interruption or disciplinary hold. He had left it open all night. The notice had dimmed twice and brightened again when the tablet recognized his hand. Calder, 53, and too practiced to be called old, worked as senior harbor systems engineer for the Saltgate Authority. The title had once meant competence. After the blockade, it meant anyone who could make old systems pretend they still had a future. His mother, Agnes, slept in a narrow apartment above the inland tram line, with a medication pump that needed imported filters every 6 weeks. His daughter, Etta, had stopped answering his routine calls after leaving the harbor programming office, though she still answered technical questions when anger lost its argument with curiosity. Saltgate had reached the first fragile morning of ceasefire. The war had not ended with a parade. It had ended with signatures, exhausted power grids, and officials using the word reopening in every sentence until the word began to sound like heat. The city-state lived from the strait, grain through the Eastern Channel, hospital resin from the northern factories, wages from ships tied to cranes and cranes tied to crews. For 19 months of blockade, every household had learned the weight of delay. Now, the ministry needed proof that peace could be measured in berths, manifests, and safe passage. At noon, foreign observers would tour the harbor. At midnight, the first ceremonial transit would cross the strait under floodlights. Before any of that, Calder needed to certify the harbor sensor array, the chain of underwater listening posts and shore cameras that told the city whether the water ahead held a ship, debris, mine casing, drone, animal, or nothing. If the array passed, Saltgate could sell the morning as a recovery. If it failed, the reopening stopped. Dock wages stopped with it. Relief shipments waited outside the breakwater. The ministry found someone to blame. Calder's job entered review, and Agnes's coverage hung from the same hook. Worker safety, public confidence, his mother's lungs, his own name in the audit trail, all of it narrowed to the little gray button under his thumb. He moved his hand away from Autopass. The tower gave a metallic tick as wind pressed the exterior bracing. Calder opened manual diagnostics and selected the Eastern Shoal check. The system asked for credential confirmation. He pressed his palm to the side reader. A blue line crossed the screen, paused at the scar below his index finger, then accepted him. "Come on," he said. The diagnostic began with the plain things. Power stable, cabinet seal intact, fiber link responsive, acoustic baseline loading, optical relay loading. The progress circle advanced in patient increments. Calder set his mug under the coffee spout without turning from the screen. The machine spat an inch of burned black coffee into it and stopped. Acoustic baseline failed. The words appeared without drama. Calder's hand tightened around the mug until heat climbed into the old burn across his thumb. The progress circle vanished. A second line populated beneath the first. Optical relay unresolved. Manual inspection required. Certification blocked, pending engineer review. The transit board answered before he touched anything. Eastern Shoal went gray, then amber, then gray again. "No," Calder said, too flat to count as a protest. He reran the check. He watched each stage, jaw set, tongue pressed into a molar that had cracked during the winter shortages, and never stopped complaining. Power stable, cabinet seal intact, fiber link responsive, but acoustic baseline failed, optical relay unresolved. A small secondary prompt opened. Report safety critical fault to Ministry Q? If he accepted, the system would page operations, freeze the noon tour schedule, notify the Union Safety Channel, and attach his credential to the first failure report of the reopening day. If he dismissed it, the prompt would return every 4 minutes. If he used a maintenance hold, the fault would leave the public certification queue while he inspected physical hardware. That, too, would record his name. Under the PEACE audit standards, every manual delay carried cryptographic signature verification. No one could bury a touch in Saltgate anymore. The war had taught the city that ghosts lived in missing records. Calder set the mug down hard enough to spill coffee across the saucer. He opened the hold menu. The options read like moral positions disguised as procedure. Hardware inspection, weather contamination, calibration review, debris interference, pending cabinet access. He chose hardware inspection. He added the minimum note, Eastern Shoal baseline unstable. Physical relay check underway. He signed it. The timestamp fixed itself to his credential at 5:46 in the morning. The insurance notice blinked on the tablet, patient and red. Calder took his coat from the back of the chair, shoved the maintenance tablet into the inner pocket, and left the tower console on local lock. The stairwell outside smelled of wet steel and old brake dust. 5 flights down, the wind found every seam in the tower and used them as instruments. He descended with one hand on the rail, boots striking the perforated metal, each step returning a hollow clang that traveled down ahead of him. At ground level, the dock apron spread slick and empty under sodium lamps. The first crew vans waited behind the access gate, with their heaters running, exhaust folding into the rain. Calder crossed the concrete toward the eastern relay cabinet, a waist-high steel box bolted to the storm rail where the pier bent toward the shoals. Salt crust had gathered under its hinges. The cabinet's status bead glowed steady green, which meant the outer shell believed in itself. Funny hour for a walk. Rafik Anwar stood beside a stack of coiled hawsers, heavy canvas coat dark with rain. His beard carried silver in uneven patches, and his hands rested bare at his sides despite the cold. A union grievance card hung from a lanyard against his chest, laminated and beaten at the corners. Calder had seen him across bargaining tables, at safety briefings, outside funerals where dockmen stood in lines with their caps in both hands. Rafik never wasted greetings when anger would do cleaner work. "Routine inspection," Calder said.
"Then say routine like you mean it."
Calder crouched at the relay cabinet and unlatched the outer cover. The hinge complained. Inside, the fiber bundle sat in a sealed channel, dry and color-coded, no obvious intrusion. The acoustic converter showed nominal power. Rain tapped the open cabinet door and ran in thin silver tracks along the outer lip. Rafik came closer. "My shift lead saw amber on the tower board."
"Transient baseline variance."
"Don't feed me that shit before breakfast." Calder removed the inspection wand from his coat and scanned the cabinet seal. "A variance isn't a failure."
"Your board says otherwise."
"The public board reflects certification state, not fault condition." Rafik barked a laugh without amusement.
"There it is. You people hide a knife in a dictionary and call it safety."
Calder kept the wand moving. "Seal intact. No moisture. No impact. No tamper mark." "The system flagged an unresolved reading. I'm checking whether the physical relay caused it."
"And if the relay didn't?"
"Then I escalate."
"When?"
Calder clipped the wand to the cabinet door.
"When I know what I'm escalating."
Rafik reached into his coat and pulled out a folded packet sealed in a transparent sleeve. Dockside safety records, probably printed after the night shift, the way Rafik liked them, physical paper to irritate digital men. He held them low, angled away from the rain.
"My crew goes under those cranes at noon. We lock into automated load patterns after midnight. If the shoal array misses debris, a tug loses guidance. If a tug loses guidance, a cable snaps. When a cable snaps, men get cut in half while ministers talk about renewal.
Crane load safety is separate from shoal classification. Water doesn't care which department wrote the form." The statement landed harder than Calder wanted. He checked the converter again, then the power coupler, then the fiber bend radius. All proper, all clean. His tablet vibrated against his chest, the 4-minute fault prompt returning to remind him of the thing he had deferred. A gull dropped out of the gray and settled on the rusted storm rail, not 12 feet from the cabinet. It should have lifted again when Rafik shifted his weight, or when Calder pulled the tablet free, or when a service cart rattled over a joint farther down the pier. Instead, it tucked one yellow foot beneath its body and sat in the rain with the dull composure of a creature that owed the harbor nothing. Saltgate had trained metal to report stress, water to declare traffic, workers to scan badges, engineers to sign every doubt. The gull accepted the weather without clearance. Its fetters rose and flattened in the wind. A white thread of droppings marked the rail below it, bright against rust, indecently ordinary. Calder opened the proximity overlay to mark the bird's position, while the thought still irritated him. The handheld tablet drew the pier, the rail, the cabinet, the shoal beyond. It should have rendered a small, living return, low-mass, organic, intermittent motion. Nothing appeared. He adjusted range. Nothing. He stepped sideways and lifted the tablet toward the gull until rain collected on the screen. The western pier sensor caught his body as a blue outline. The eastern shoal array showed empty water, empty rail, empty air. Rafik read Calder's face before Calder had arranged it into anything useful.
"What?"
Calder wiped rain off the tablet.
"Hold on."
"Don't hold on me."
"What?"
"The local proximity echo isn't resolving. That bird is sitting right there."
"I see it."
"Does the fucking system see it?" Calder closed the overlay, reopened it, forced a live refresh.
The gull shook its head and remained absent from the array's world. No echo, no displacement marker, no rejected classification. Blank. He had wanted a loose cable, water in the cabinet, a cracked converter, something with a wrench-shaped answer. The cabinet in front of him offered nothing but clean compliance. "The array may have a blind sector," Calder said. "May." Calder slid the tablet into his coat, too slowly. "I need tower access to confirm." Rafik's mouth flattened. "Then you confirm before one of my people stands under a moving load." "The reopening schedule? Fuck the schedule." Rafik stepped closer, and the gull finally opened its beak in a sound the wind tore away. "I buried cousins under reopening schedules. You give us clear safety or I walk the crews. Not a slowdown, not a statement, a strike. The ministry can hang banners over an empty dock." Calder locked the relay cabinet and sealed the latch. The tablet vibrated again, a small animal panic against his ribs. "If you strike before the technical process completes, Voss will call it sabotage. Minister Voss can call the tide treason if it suits her." Rafik tapped the packet against his own chest. "I care what happens to bodies." Calder had no answer clean enough to speak. The administrator's summons arrived before he reached the tower stairs. His wristband chimed, then displayed ministerial briefing, Harbor Administrative Wing, 10 in the morning, attendance required. The message carried the priority stamp of Helene Voss's office, which meant refusal generated more paperwork than obedience. He returned to the tower first. Rainwater dripped from his coat onto the floor panels while he restored the eastern shoal feed to diagnostic view. The system gave him the same failure in calmer language. Acoustic baseline failed. Optical relay unresolved. Proximity echo inconsistent with physical grid. He opened a draft report, wrote, "Safety critical blind sector suspected," and stopped before submitting. The phrase carried too much weight. It would freeze the board. It would leave Agnes's notice burning on the tablet with a new deadline attached. It would hand Voss the shape of his disobedience before he knew whether the fault came from salt, software, or old damage in the shoal line. Calder deleted suspected. He wrote, "under review." Then he deleted that, too. At 9:40, he locked the tower console, muted the fault alarms to local only, and walked the secure corridor toward the administrative wing. The corridor ran behind the customs sheds, all concrete, glass, and coated doors, with old shell patches still visible where the ministry had painted around commemorative plaques rather than repair the wall completely. Civil servants moved in pairs, carrying tablets against their chests. A banner crew wrestled a blue and white reopening flag through the lobby doors. The fabric snapped in the draft and briefly wrapped around one man's head. He cursed, muffled and sincere, before smoothing himself back into official posture. Minister Helene Voss's briefing room faced the inner harbor. Screens along the front wall displayed the strait from angles selected to flatter it. Cranes aligned, water silvered, convoy lights arranged like beads on a wire. Voss stood before them in a charcoal suit, hair pinned back, no jewelry except a narrow silver watch. Her aides sat along one side with tablets ready. Port directors filled the first row. Calder took a seat near the rear wall, where the carpet met a strip of exposed cable housing and the room's heating never quite reached. Voss began at exactly 10. "Today is not ceremonial," she said. "Ceremony is what weak governments offer when material confidence has failed. Today is operational. At noon, our observers will see a harbor governed by procedure. At midnight, the Eastern Transit will reopen under our own certification. Families will wake tomorrow to wages, heat, medicine, and proof that Saltgate can keep its promises." She spoke without raising her voice, Every word arrived polished and usable. Calder had admired that once in the war, when clarity meant fewer dead men at the end of a line. Now, the polish made the words harder to hold. Voss advanced the slide. A simplified map of the harbor appeared, all channels green. The eastern shoal line, in this version, never flickered. "We will encounter hesitation," she continued. "Hesitation can be prudent in an engineer. Institutional hesitation, performed in public, becomes contagion. Bad actors will exploit it. External markets will price it. Labor factions may attempt to convert caution into leverage. We respect safety concerns. We will not reward panic." Calder's tablet warmed in his coat where the local fault cue kept pulsing. He pictured the gull absent from the overlay. He pictured Rafik's packet in the rain. A port director asked about insurance on incoming hulls. An aide answered with language from the treaty annex. A customs official asked about protest perimeters. Voss said the police service would maintain a dignified civic distance, a phrase that meant barricades far enough from cameras to preserve the mood. Someone mentioned the union. Voss allowed a thin pause. "Mr. Anwar understands the cost of theater," she said. "If he forgets, we will remind him with payroll law." A few people in the room smiled the tight smile employed men who had never handled wet rope. Calder kept his hands folded. The scar on his thumb had gone pale from pressure. Voss turned toward the rear. "Mr. Ides," his name moved through the room like a chair dragged over concrete. "Yes, Minister. You maintained continuity through the blockade and the restoration period. Your team has the final certification window tonight." "My office has the certification queue," Calder said. "Precision appreciated. You personally will close the Eastern Transit packet at midnight." A screen beside her populated with a schedule. Calder Ives, final technical certification, Eastern Transit reopening. The letters appeared too large. "Minister," he said, "the Eastern Shoal Line remains under review." Voss accepted the sentence with a small nod. "All critical infrastructure remains under review until certified. I mean active maintenance review. Does that review threaten the schedule?" Every face in the room waited without seeming to. Calder could report the fault here. The words existed. Safety critical blind sector. Manual inspection confirms hardware relay intact. Certification must halt. He saw the chain that would follow. Operations alerts, union notification, Voss's closed-door summons, Agnes's benefits account tagged under administrative uncertainty, Etta reading his name in the public failure feed, with whatever expression she used now when he disappointed her. "Not at this stage," he said. Voss held him there half a beat longer. "Good. Saltgate needs experienced hands today. Not nerves." The briefing moved on. Calder sat with the sentence he had offered and found no comfort in its narrow accuracy. Back in the corridor, his wristband showed 3 missed calls from tower operations and 1 text from benefits compliance. He opened the benefits message despite himself. Coverage review tied to employment status. No action required at this time. The bureaucratic mercy of no action required made his teeth ache. He closed it and walked faster. The tower had grown brighter by late morning, not from sunlight, but from the working harbor waking under cloud. Trucks moved along the gate roads. Workers gathered near the canteen awning. The convoy beyond the breakwater held position, navigation lights steady against the gray. Calder stripped off his wet coat, hung it from the chair, and unmuted the local alarms. The console filled with patient reprimand. He opened the live Eastern Shoal stream beside the diagnostics. Raw acoustic lines crawled across the monitor, thin as hair, mapping the water by return and absence. In a stable system, absence meant space. In a bad system, absence could mean anything. Alder searched the maintenance records first. Storm damage, bird strikes on optical housings, cable stress from the last winter ice. Nothing matched. He expanded the date range through the restoration period. Minor recalibrations, clean external audits. One note from 9 months earlier. Low mass organic returns reduced under eastern wind shear, cleared by automated model. He opened archive access. The screen prompted for elevated credentials. Calder placed his palm on the reader. The blue scan line moved across his skin. A second prompt requested a reason. Peace reopening certification support, he typed. The system accepted, stamped, sealed. He knew the archive's organization too well. Wartime logs lived under layers of neutral names. Anomaly reports, classification exceptions, countermeasure reviews, operator waivers. They had built the folders that way during the blockade to keep decision-makers calm. Calm people signed faster. He searched for Eastern Shoal, baseline drift, proximity echo, low-mass misclassification. The first results came from the harmless years, lost buoys and sensor wash from storms. Then the archive pulled older records from sealed storage. 19 months of war opened line by line. His coffee went cold beside the keyboard. At 1:30 in the afternoon, the Eastern Shoal Tower camera showed rain thickening over the water. At 1:40, Calder sound first match. Archived anomaly, Eastern Shoal acoustic displacement. Classification confidence elevated in crosswind. Low-profile civilian hull tag as hostile auxiliary. Countermeasure release authorized by automated escalation protocol. Human validation attached. He opened the attachment. A grainy overhead image filled the center screen. A supply vessel sat angled against black water, low and blunt, deck stacked with tarped cargo. The system outline around it glowed red. Hostile auxiliary, probability 87%. The timestamp came from the final winter of the blockade, during the week when Saltgate had nearly run out of anesthetic and the Ministry had ordered maximum interdiction around the shoals. Calder read the human validation field. Warrant Technical Officer Calder Ives. Classification confidence accepted. Automated response window confirmed. His chair gave a small plastic creak under him. He opened the casualty annex. Civilian supply vessel Orison. Declared cargo, flour, saline, water filters, analgesic stock. Crew, 8. Harbor status, lost with all hands. Lost with all hands. The archive used that phrase the way drains used water. Calder closed the axe. He opened the next anomaly. Another low-profile hull, another crosswind, another red outline. Human validation, Calder Ives. This vessel had carried fuel bladders and refrigerated vaccines. 12 crew lost. He stopped closing the annexes after the 4th. The pattern became worse when left open. 5 windows, then 7, then 9, each attached to a night or morning he remembered as weather, pressure, sleep deprivation, command chatter, coded warnings. He remembered approving confidence levels under artillery reports. He remembered eating crackers with one hand while the system asked for validation with the other. He remembered telling himself that operators validated classifications, not deaths. The difference had kept him working. A new result appeared after the archive finished unsealing a deeper file. Misclassification drift, Eastern Shoal. Root cause unresolved, related to adaptive response tuning during maximum threat posture. Recommendation: suppress non-essential organic and low-mass returns to reduce false negative on hostile microcraft. He read the recommendation twice. Suppress non-essential organic and low-mass returns. The gull on a rail sat inside that sentence, damp and alive and absent. Calder stood too fast. The floor tilted, or his body corrected badly. He put one hand against the console until the tower steadied. Outside, a truck reversed with a long, pulsing beep. It sounded absurdly cheerful. His wristband chimed with Voss's office code. He let it ring out. A second call followed. He muted the band and returned to the report draft. A full safety halt required incident description, current fault details, hardware inspection, operational risk, and relevant history. Relevant history had teeth. Once attached, it could not be quietly removed from the peace audit. The system would replicate it to ministry oversight, union safety, treaty observers, and the public transparency spool after legal review. Voss could delay disclosure. She could not erase the cryptographic chain without creating a crime bright enough for enemies to read from orbit. Calder opened a narrower form. Technical reservation. Non-public. It allowed an engineer to flag unresolved maintenance without freezing ceremonial schedules. The option had survived the peace audit under the old argument that minor faults needed space to resolve. Minor. The word did more work than it deserved. He wrote, Eastern Shoal Array exhibits acoustic baseline instability and proximity echo inconsistency under current weather conditions. Recommend recalibration before full operating load. He left out Orison. He left out the other vessels. He left out Lost with all hands. He left out his own name, wherever it had already appeared. He submitted. Voss called within 20 seconds. Calder let the third chime complete before answering. Ives, withdraw the reservation, Voss said. Her voice came through clean. No office noise behind it. She had gone somewhere private. The array needs recalibration. Your form reads like a man covering himself. It is a technical reservation. It is an unhelpful half-measure. If you have a safety-critical fault, report it through the proper channel. If you have a calibration issue, fix it. Do not put a smear on the certification packet and ask me to pretend it is science. Calder stared at the live feed. Rain stippled the eastern camera housing. The hardware relay is intact. Then you are dealing with software. Or inherited tuning. A small pause. Meaning? Adaptive response parameters from the blockade may be affecting present classification. Maybe. I need time. You have until midnight. I need enough time to test the current array against archived anomaly patterns. You are not opening the blockade archive on reopening day. The sentence came too fast. Calder's fingers rested over the keyboard. The archive already opened under my credential. Voss inhaled through her nose. The line flattened a sound into static. Calder. She almost never used first names. When she did, the room usually contained no witnesses. We survived the blockade, she said. Not cleanly. Not in a way that will satisfy people who had the luxury of hindsight. We survived. Today is how we keep surviving. Civilian vessels were mistagged at the Eastern Shoal. Allegations around wartime classifications are handled by the Review Commission. The Commission never saw this chain. You do not know that. I know what the access record says. Calm, deliberate narration with a controlled, sarcastic edge. You know enough to become dangerous to yourself. The polish left her voice for one sentence, then returned. Withdraw the reservation. Complete the recalibration. Certify if the current system passes. That is your job. The current system isn't seeing a gull on the rail.
I am not shutting down the recovery of the city over a bird. It isn't the bird.
Then stop talking like a poet and do the engineering.
The line cut. Calder remained with the dead connection at his ear until the console alarm pulled him back. The technical reservation had changed state. Rejected by ministerial authority. Reason, insufficient basis for schedule impact. Certification window remains active. He laughed once, a dry sound with no humor in it.
You polished piece of shit.
The tower door opened behind him. Rafik entered without waiting for permission, rain shining on his shoulders. A harbor security officer hovered beyond the threshold, unwilling to put hands on the Union steward during reopening day without orders. Calder dismissed the officer with two fingers. The man withdrew, grateful.
You rejected our safety meeting, Rafik said.
I didn't receive a request. I sent it to operations.
Operations buried it. Convenient.
Calder rubbed the bridge of his nose. The skin there felt raw.
Not mine.
Everything here is yours when you want authority. Nothing is yours when we need a name. The sentence struck near the archive windows. Calder turned back to the console and minimized the casualty annexes before Rafik could rate them. Rafik noticed the motion. Of course he did.
What are you hiding?
Classified logs. War logs? Some. Rafik came to the console rail but kept his hands off the equipment. Dockmen understood boundaries around machinery, even when they hated the men who ran it. My cousins died out there. Civilian boat, flour and filters. Ministry said hostile confusion, fog of war, impossible conditions. They gave my aunt a folded flag she didn't ask for, and a credit voucher that bounced twice.
Calder's throat worked around words that had no shape yet.
What boat? He asked, though part of him already knew.
Orison. The archive window sat minimized at the bottom of the screen, a small rectangle of blue-gray light.
Calder could have lied. He had lied in smaller ways all morning and called each one procedure. He opened the window. Rafik leaned in. Rainwater dripped from his coat to the floor. Calder heard each drop. Orison's overhead image filled the center screen again. Low hull, tarped cargo, red hostile outline. Human validation attached. Rafik read the field.
His face changed without moving much.
The windburn on his cheeks seemed suddenly painted onto stone.
You signed it, he said.
I validated classification confidence. Rafik's hand rose, then stopped before touching the screen.
You signed it.
I didn't order the strike.
You signed the system that ordered it.
The protocol required say died. Calder closed his mouth. Rafik's voice lowered. That made it worse. Say they died. Calder read the casualty annex where the archive had placed it, in clean administrative font, under the vessel name. 8 crew, lost with all hands.
They died, Calder said.
Rafik nodded once, like he had forced a jammed latch open.
Good. Keep that word handy.
I'm not finished reviewing the chain. My crews walk at dusk if the eastern board stays gray.
Rafik,
and if it turns green without a public fault report, we walk for a different reason. He tapped the casualty annex with one blunt finger, leaving a wet print near Calder's name.
I don't have your archive access. I have widows, bad backs, men with mortgages, and a smell for bullshit.
You bury this and we will make noise you can hear in your sleep.
You think I sleep?
I think men like you call insomnia conscience and expect a medal.
The door slammed behind him when he left.
The security officer outside said nothing. Calder sat with the wet fingerprint drying near his wartime signature.
By 4 in the afternoon, the rain had thinned into a hard mist.
The tower windows held a film of salt.
Calder had run every comparison the archive allowed. The current Blying Sector mapped over the old drift within a margin too small to dismiss. The tuning suppressions remained active in legacy classification layers, masked under restoration patches, not visible in the standard reopening checklist. The system's present failure had not caused the historical pattern. It had revealed it. Somewhere under all the updated interfaces, a wartime decision still taught the harbor what to ignore. His maintenance tablet battery fell below a third. He plugged it into the wall charger near the auxiliary console. His hands had begun to tremble from coffee and no food. He forced down a protein bar that tasted like sweet chalk, then opened Agnes's benefits notice again. No action required at this time. He pressed his thumb over the message until the tablet dimmed. He could picture her apartment without wanting to. The recliner by the heater, the pill tray with weekday lids, the small sack of library mysteries she read in order and then denied reading in order. Agnes had spent the blockade boiling lentils on a camping stove and telling him that technical people had been keeping the city alive. She still said it when nurses came. "My son kept the harbor alive." She said alive with the pride of a mother who had no interest in the nouns hidden underneath. His wristband chimed with a call he had avoided for nearly a year, unless birthdays and clinic emergencies forced him into courage. Etta Ives. Calder hadn't called her yet. He had opened her contact twice and closed it both times. Now her name burned on the band, like the system had done it for him. He answered. "Etta." "You opened the blockade archive?" she said. No greeting, no surprise. Her voice came quick and level through a wash of street noise. "How do you know?" "I still have audit watchers on old code branches." "That's illegal." So was tuning civilian ambiguity toward maximum response and calling it protection. Calder shut his eyes, then opened them before darkness supplied images. "I need you to review something. I assumed. The Eastern Shoal Array is failing current certification. The fault matches old drift." "How close?" "Close enough that I don't want to say it on an open line." "Then don't." He could hear traffic behind her, wet tires or tram grooves. She had not hung up. "I need a technical consultation," Calder said. "You need a conscience with a compiler?" "I need to know whether there's a clean fix before midnight." "Clean." She let the word pass through the line bare. "That's your favorite fairy tale. Etta. Tower Canteen, 7. I'm bringing cashed notes. If security stops me, you tell them I'm there under your authority." "Are you?"
"No.
But you're still good at signing things." The line cut. Calder lowered his wrist. The tower had grown noisy in the way control rooms did near deadlines. Printers stirred, alerts chimed, distant voices came through the operations wall, clipped and strained. The transit board showed every channel green except Eastern Shoal, where amber pulsed behind the maintenance hold. Public displays outside the terminal softened that to delayed verification. The phrase rotated beneath a smiling graphic of the midnight convoy route. Delayed verification. A lie with clean shoes. At 6, Voss sent a written directive. Final certification remains assigned to Calder Ives. Engineer will resolve maintenance hold or submit safety critical fault with full evidentiary basis before midnight. Unauthorized release of classified wartime material prohibited. Administrative consequences apply. Administrative consequences. And Agnes's medication pump sat inside those words. Calder printed the directive. He had not printed anything in months. The tower printer coughed, dragged a single sheet through its rollers, and delivered Voss's language, warm and faintly curled. He folded it once and put it in his coat pocket beside the maintenance tablet. Paper felt more accusatory than a scream. It could not dim itself to save power. By 7 in the evening, the harbor canteen smelled of fryer oil, wet wool, and coffee burnt past rescue. Most workers had taken their meals outside or in crew rooms after a fake's warning spread. The canteen's wide windows faced the Syrtis Road, where ministry vans moved in tight little convoys, and police barricades waited folded on trailers. Calder sat in the corner farthest from the ordering counter with his laptop open and the archive isolated on a secure local partition. Etta entered wearing a black rain shell beaded with water, close-cropped hair flattened at the crown. She carried a canvas shoulder bag and Nell umbrella. Her face had sharpened since the last time he had seen her in person. Or perhaps he had lost the habit of seeing her without apology in the way. She dropped into the chair opposite him. No embrace, no offered cheek. Her fingers tapped once against the tabletop, not in patience exactly, more like code running under skin. "You're thinner," Calder said. "Don't start with father noises." He accepted that. "Coffee?" "If it came from that urn, it counts as assault." He almost smiled and failed. Etta unzipped the bag and removed a small storage drive sealed in a transparent case. The case carried no manufacturer mark. She placed it beside his laptop, but kept one finger on it. "You show me yours first," she said. "This machine is air-gapped from live operations." "Good for the machine." Calder opened the current diagnostics, then the archived drift comparisons, then the Orison record. Anna watched without interruption, expression held in that precise stillness she had inherited from him and then improved into a weapon. When Calder reached his validation signature, her fingers stopped moving.
"You knew?"
he asked.
"I knew the Tunim could do this. I didn't know they had an event chain with your name attached."
"It wasn't just one."
"Show me."
Anna leaned closer to the screen. The canteen noise receded into plates, chairs, a distant laugh from someone trying hard to keep the day ordinary. Her face reflected pale in the glass. She read faster than he could scroll. Every few seconds, she stopped him with a tap, opened a shield, copied an identifier into a plain text scratch pad. Calder had seen her at 14 take apart household devices and reassemble them with improvements no one had requested. He had been proud then, in the lazy way fathers praised what they did not yet understand would leave them behind.
"Here," she said. She opened a legacy parameter table buried inside the archived anomaly. Lines of plain labels and weighted values filled the screen. She dragged three fields into the scratch pad. Organic suppression, low mass return deprioritization, ambiguity escalation under crosswind. "These shouldn't survive into the restoration build," Calder said. The parameter table still glowed across the canteen screen, the legacy labels stark against the archived anomaly.
"Etta, no. Read the weights. Don't skim them into innocence," he read. The weights favored hostile classification under uncertain crosswind returns. Organic markers had been suppressed to reduce clutter. Low-profile hulls carrying thermal irregularity, such as hot engines under tarps or medical refrigeration units, could cross a threshold and escalate. The logic had been sold as protection against drone swarms and disguised hostile craft. In practice, it turned supply boats into targets when weather, cargo heat, and low hull profile aligned. Etta pushed the storage drive toward him. "Cash notes from the tuning meeting. I took them when I resigned." Calder's hand stopped short of the drive. "That's a state security charge. So is falsifying the peace certification."
"You shouldn't have brought it."
"You called me for a clean fix," I brought the dirt. He inserted the drive. The case's seal broke with a dry click. Etta keyed the passphrase herself, hands moving quickly over the keyboard. The files opened in a sequence. Internal memo, risk matrix, waiver packet, model update notes. The memo title made the canteen tilt around him. Maximum lethality response tuning for Eastern Shoal threat environment. Etta's mouth tightened. They changed the title in the procurement record. Called it Adaptive Defensive Confidence. I never saw this title. You saw the waiver. She opened the packet. Calder read his own signature before he read the text. Warrant Technical Officer Calder Ives. Emergency authorization. Operator accepts increased false positive risk under conditions of existential maritime threat. Civilian ambiguity mitigation deferred pending active theater stabilization. His name sat under that phrase in black script, confident and tired. I signed hundreds of emergency waivers, he said. Etta's chair legs scraped the floor. That's your defense? It's context. It's camouflage. The city was under shelling. People keep saying that as if shells rewrite arithmetic. They were firing drone skips through medical corridors. We have 3 minutes to classify half the traffic in the water. And someone offered you a system that treated doubt as permission to kill. You signed. Calder pushed back from the laptop. You wrote parts of the optimization. Etta flinched. Not much. Enough. Yes, she said. I did. I was 25 and angry and good at making models faster. I thought false positives would go to human review. They did. Then what the hell were you reviewing? The words struck him open. For a few seconds, the canteen regained its sounds too sharply. Fryer basket lifted from oil, a cup set in a saucer, rain against the window, someone coughing phlegm loose near the door. Calder leaned forward and read the waiver again. Civilian ambiguity mitigation deferred. The phrase had seemed temporary then. Triage, war language. It had carried all the small permissions a man needed when he wanted to keep pressing the next button. He remembered the night of the waiver. Not clearly. That would have been mercy in reverse. He remembered the outer shoals burning beyond the sealed command room, and a younger officer sobbing in the washroom where microphones would not record her. He remembered Voss, not yet minister, moving from console to console with her hair coming loose, saying, "If we let one hostile through, the reservoir goes." He remembered signing with one hand while rubbing grit from his eyes with the other. "I told myself validation meant probability, not consequence," Calder said. Etta sat down again, slowly. That is the cleanest version of her dirty thing.
I know.
No, her voice sharpened. You know it now. That's different. He took that without protest. The laptop screen dimmed. He plugged it into the wall outlet beneath the canteen bench. His fingers missed the socket twice before finding it. Etta saw. She said nothing. What happens if I attach this? He asked. The current fault becomes part of the historical anomaly chain. Any certification with that unresolved field becomes knowingly false. If you file it safety critical, Voss can scream, suspend, threaten, bury under legal review. She can't green the transit without creating a record of override.
Can the array be catched before midnight?
No.
You haven't checked the full current build.
I don't need to. Legacy suppressions are embedded below the layer your checklist tests. The gull proved live blindness. The archive proves pattern. The memo proves intent. Your waiver proves acceptance. He rubbed both hands over his face. Stubble rasped against his palms.
Agnes loses coverage as I'm suspended.
Etta's anger moved, not away, but deeper.
I know.
She won't last 3 months on the public queue.
I know. Calder wanted her to say more. He wanted the cruelty of accusation or the ease of pity.
Etta gave him neither.
I can file the current fault without the memo, he said.
You can.
That stops tonight's transit.
Maybe.
It avoids classified release. It preserves the lie that this started today.
He exhaled through his nose. You always make the most expensive sentence sound obvious.
You taught me to name dependencies.
I taught you to overdocument variables.
You taught me to hide fear in tools.
Her fingers resumed their silent tapping against the tabletop.
I learned well.
The admission entered him sideways.
Etta, I wrote routines that help this thing choose faster. I left when I saw how they weighted ambiguity. I stole notes instead of making a public complaint. I told myself I needed proof, then told myself proof needed timing, then told myself timing needed protection. 4 years of elegant cowardice. So don't ask me to absolve you. I'm not clean enough.
He studied the storage drive between them. A cheap black rectangle with enough force inside it to damage the ministry. The reopening, his career, his mother's care, his daughter's freedom, perhaps all of Saltgate's fragile confidence in the morning. It contained no explosive, no weapon, just decisions kept.
What do you want from me? Calder asked.
Etta's laugh came without light. Still making it about permission.
What do you want?
I want the next boat not to disappear into a sentence like loss with all hands. I want you to stop saying variance when they mean blind. I want my part in this recorded before someone else drowns under our math.
Your part?
If you attach my notes, my access theft shows. I can strip metadata.
I'll put it back.
Etta, no. She leaned over the table, face close now, voice low enough that no one beyond them could catch all of it. You do not protect me by editing the truth into something comfortable. If you file, file the damn chain.
Calder heard Rafik Imrat say, died. Keep that word handy.
His wristband chimed again. Voss's office. Then tower operations. Then benefits compliance. Automatic and indifferent. He silenced the band with his palm.
Etta packed nothing away. She left the drive in the laptop.
I'm coming to the tower.
You don't have clearance.
You have authority until you don't.
They walked back through the secure corridor at 8:30, under strip lights that hummed at a frequency Calder only noticed when exhaustion peeled away his defenses. Security checked Etta's temporary pass twice. Calder signed her in as technical consultant, accepting the audit stamp without comment. Outside the glass, workers gathered near the gate in clusters. Rafik stood at the center of one, arms folded, head bare, in the mist. Ministry cameras avoided him by pointing toward the flags. The tower felt smaller with Etta in it. She took the auxiliary station without asking and began copying current logs into a sealed evidence packet. Calder restored the archive windows. Together they built the chain. Live failure, physical cabinet inspection, proximity absence at the rail, legacy suppression parameters, archived anomalies, casualty annexes, tuning memo, waiver, current certification risk. Each attachment required a description. Calder wrote the first two in his old language. Etta read them and said, again. He changed acoustic inconsistency to blind sector. He changed adverse low-mass classification behavior to system suppresses living and civilian returns under conditions matching past deadly events. He changed prior vessel loss incidents to civilian crews died after misclassification. The plainer words did not cleanse anything. They made the record heavier, and that at least seemed honest.
At 9:15, Voss arrived in the tower without announcement. She brought two aides and the head of harbor security, a broad man who kept his hands politely clasped, as if politeness might survive orders. Voss paused at the threshold long enough to register Etta at the auxiliary station, the archive windows, the printed directive on Calder's desk, the Dugutern Eastern Shoal Line pulsing behind them. "Nesides," she said, "you are no longer an employee of this authority."
"Consultant under Calder's credential," Etta said, typing.
"Then your presence is his liability."
Etta did not stop typing. "He collects those." Voss turned to Calder. "Clear the room."
"No," Calder said. The word surprised even him with its shape. Small, plain, firm enough to stand. Voss's aides exchanged a quick movement. Calder caught it in the reflection on the dark window. Not a glance, more a bureaucratic shiver.
"You are under direct instruction," Voss said.
"I am preserving a safety-critical record. You are manufacturing one."
"The live array failed manual diagnostic. Physical relay is intact. Proximity echo missed a burr on the storm rail. The same suppression parameters map to wartime misclassifications."
Voss stepped closer to the main console. "A bird?
And Orison at seven other vessels in the chain so far.
Rafik's cousins had names in the annex. Calder had read them at last. He did not speak them here. Not to use them as leverage before Voss. Not with Rafik absent from the room and the dead unable to choose their own deployment." Voss's voice cooled. "You are not an investigator."
"I'm the certifying engineer."
"Then certify the current system or report a current fault. You have no mandate to adjudicate the war."
"The current fault exposes the war."
"That is a sentence for tribunals, not control towers."
"Tribunals never got the file."
Voss's gaze shifted to Etta's storage drive. That movement changed the room's pressure.
"Remove that device." Etta lifted both hands away from the keyboard.
"Packet already mirrored to local audit buffer. Removal logs as tamper attempt."
Harbor Security's head turned toward Voss. He had heard enough to understand personal risk.
Good security officers survive by knowing when a order sanged.
Voss said, "Miss Ives is in possession of stolen state material."
Etta's hands returned to the keyboard.
"Correct."
"Calder, do you understand the exposure you are creating for your daughter?"
He felt the old impulse rise. Narrow the frame, protect the family noun. Trade public truth for private mitigation. It moved in him with the ease of muscle memory. He could ask Etta to step out. He could file a current-only thought. He could give Voss a path that punished him less and preserved the official silence a few more years. The tower around him ticked and hummed, a machine built to convert choices into records.
"Etta decides her exposure," he said.
Something in Etta's posture altered, barely. Not forgiveness. Recognition, perhaps.
Voss heard it, too. Her face lost a last trace of appeal.
"Then understand yours. If you attach classified wartime material to tonight's certification, you will be suspended pending investigation. Your credential will be revoked. Your benefits will enter administrative review. Given your mother's dependent coverage, you may wish to consider the full human consequences before indulging in moral theater."
There it was, said cleanly enough for minutes. Calder opened the benefits notice on his tablet and set it beside the keyboard. The red warning illuminated his hand.
"I have considered them all day," he said.
"And you count on that?"
Loss's mouth tightened.
"You count on sick mothers," Calder said. "Mortgages, dock wages, people ashamed to break the machine that feeds them. You stack enough private terror under a public lie and call the structure peace."
"Spare me the awakening speech."
It isn't for you.
No. Voss's voice sharpened again. It is for yourself. Men who sign wartime waivers often discover principle after consequence becomes unfashionable. The sentence cut. It also told the truth, or enough of it to hurt. Calder nodded. Yes. Voss paused. Yes, she repeated. I signed.
I delayed today.
I tried to file a narrow caveat and leave the dead out of it. I am not clean.
Etta's typing stopped. Calder kept his hands on the console edge.
The array remains blind. Voss regarded him with an expression too disciplined to call hatred.
Midnight remains the deadline. If that packet goes out with unauthorized archive material, you will not control what follows.
I hadn't controlled what follows for years.
Dramatic nonsense. Technical fact. Voss turned to Harbor Security. Keep Miss Ives in the building. Do not touch the console unless legal authorizes seizure. Mr. Ives, you have less than 3 hours to remember your duties.
She left with her aides. Security remained near the door, uneasy and silent. Calder returned to the evidence packet.
Etta did not speak for several minutes. When she did, her voice had lost its blade edge, which somehow made it harder to bear.
Which part?
Not clean.
He read the next attachment prompt.
Yes.
Good, she said. Then, after a beat, don't get drunk on it.
He almost laughed. Oh, there's no liquor in the tower. You know what I mean.
At 10:30, Rafik's union notice entered the public operations feed. Dock crews will suspend participation in automated load and transit operations unless the Eastern Shoal certification is completed with full safety disclosure. The notice listed worker categories, gate locations, and legal counsel. It contained no rhetoric. Rafik understood force. He also understood paperwork. Voss answered through the ministry media channel at 11. Saltgate's reopening remains on schedule. Isolated labor disruption will not compromise public safety or civic recovery. Certified systems and experienced personnel are in place.
Experienced personnel.
Calder could hear her voice inside the phrase. Calls began hitting the tower line after that. Operations chiefs, port directors, 2 ministry legal officers, 1 polite, 1 sweating anger through every syllable. Calder answered only calls that concerned the technical packet. Etta handled checksum verification and evidence ordering. The maintenance tablet, still plugged into the wall, climbed from low power to enough for midnight. On the main board, all lanes remained green except Eastern Shoal. The amber square had stopped seeming like an alert and started seeming like the only honest thing in the harbor.
At 11:40, fireworks barges move into position beyond the inner breakwater. Calder saw their low shapes on the western camera. The celebration had been scheduled for after the midnight transit began, but the ministry wanted the sky ready. Public confidence preferred light.
Etta read the final packet aloud from the auxiliary station, each item stripped to its necessary form.
Current manual diagnostic failure. Hardware inspection found relay cabinet intact. Live proximity test showed blind sector as storm rail and adjacent shoal overlay. Legacy parameters suppress organic and low mass returns. Archived wartime anomalies show matching drift. Civilian vessels misclassified as hostile under matching conditions. Countermeasure releases followed. Casualty annexes attached. Maximum lethality tuning memo attached. Emergency waiver signed by Calder Ives attached. Former programmer notes attached under self-identification by Etta Ives. Certification recommendation, fail. Transit recommendation, halt pending independent audit and physical replacement of Eastern Shoal Array.
Change fail, Calder said. To what? Refuse certification.
Etta edited. Stronger.
Stronger.
She saved the packet. At 11:52, Voss opened a direct tower channel. Her face appeared on the side screen, composed under white office light. Behind her, Calder could see a press backdrop through glass, the reopening emblem repeated in soft blue. "Mr. Ives," she said, "final check. The Eastern Shoal Array remains uncertifiable. You will receive a direct certification prompt at midnight. You will answer the prompt based on current operational status."
"Yes."
"Not historical grievance, current status. Current status includes a blind sector tied to known lethal misclassification. Your language is becoming reckless. My language is catching up." Her nostrils flared. "You are tired. You are compromised by family involvement. You are under pressure from labor. Step away from the console, and I will assign a second engineer. The hold is under my credential. A second engineer inherits my fault queue and the attached audit chain. Only if you attach it." Anna leaned back from the auxiliary station and folded her arms. Calder heard the chair creak. The security officer by the door shifted his weight and pretended not to listen. Voss lowered her voice. "Calder, you know how this city punishes interruption. You know the convoy insurers. You know the clinics waiting on shipments. If the reopening fails tonight, people will lose work, medicine, heat. Real people, not archive ghosts. Your mother among them." He did know. That knowledge had teeth and hands and the smell of Agnes's apartment heater burning dust in winter. "The convoy can wait," Calder said. "A dead crew can't. Spare me." The word came easier now. Voss ended the call. At 11:59, the control tower dimmed automatically for exterior glare reduction. The glass turned black enough to show Calder his own reflection laid over the harbor. Graying hair flattened from rain and hours. Oil stains still on one cuff from the relay cabinet. Shoulders drawn tight. Behind him, Etta sat in a blade of console light. Beyond the reflection, the strait waited. The certification prompt opened at midnight. Eastern Transit Final Technical Certification. Certifying Engineer, Calder Ives. Current status, maintenance hold active. Options, certify operational, extend maintenance review, submit safety critical fault report. Fireworks launched before the prompt finished rendering. White mursts opened over the breakwater, then red, then gold. The tower glass flashed. For an instant, the harbor vanished behind light and smoke, and Calder's body returned to a night he had trained himself not to visit. Outer shoals under fire, command rooms sealed, alarms layered until language dissolved, red outlines populating over black water. He tasted metal. His left hand cramped around the console edge. Etta said, "Calder. Not dad, not engineer. His name." The fireworks crocked again. The sound reached the tower a fraction late, a hard shove through glass. Outside, somewhere below, a crowd cheered on Ministry Q. On the side channel, Voss's voice cut in without video. "Certify now." Rafik's Union channel opened over the operations feed. Unauthorized but patched through by someone in dispatch with courage or carelessness. "Tower dock crews standing by at gates. Say to state plane." Voss snapped. "Remove labor from this channel." No one removed him. Calder selected submit safety critical fault report. The system warned, "This action will halt Eastern Transit certification and trigger external peace audit review. Attach supporting materials." He selected yes. Etta's packet appeared in the attachment pane. The file name used no flourish. Eastern Shoal Safety Critical Anomaly Chain. A second warning opened. Attached materials include classified wartime archive records and credentialed personal waiver. Unauthorized disclosure may result in criminal, civil, or administrative sanction. "Proceed?" Voss said, Mr. Ives, you are under ministerial instruction to stand down.
Rafik said, Calder.
Etta said nothing. Calder placed his right palm on the reader. The blue scan line crossed his skin, paused at the scar beneath his index finger, and waited for voice confirmation. He leaned toward the console microphone. I refuse certification of the Eastern Shoal Array, he said. The system is blind in current operation. The blind sector matches archived LIFO misclassification events. Civilian crews died under prior approvals, including mine. Full anomaly chain attached.
The room held the words.
Then the system accepted him. The transit board changed before any human voice could. Every green lane connected to the eastern route froze. The ceremonial transit banner on the public feed collapsed into a gray safety hold notice. External audit triggered, Union safety notified, treaty observers notified, ministry oversight notified, certifying credential locked pending review. The fireworks kept blooming over the water. Their reflections broke across the black strait in torn strips of color. Voss's voice came through low and script bare.
You self-righteous son of a bitch.
Calder removed his hand from the reader.
No.
What?
Not self-righteous.
The line filled with breathing, static, distant shouting. Rafik's channel remained open.
My crews stand down, he said. No one moves under automated load.
Etta exhaled once behind Calder, controlled and small.
The tower line exploded after that.
Calls stacked faster than the system could label them. Operations demanded clarification. Legal demanded that Calder cease transmitting. The Public Information Office demanded wording. Treaty observers requested full packet hash verification. The Union Safety Channel repeated stand down across every dock sector. Outside, cheering turned patchy as public screams changed. Fireworks continued for another minute before someone found the authority to stop them. The last burst opened silver over the strait and left smoke hanging low. Harbor security received orders through his earpiece. Calder watched the man's face harden into duty he disliked.
Mr. Ives, the security officer said, step away from the console.
Calder did. His knees registered the long day with an ugly little tremor. Etta copied the final packet hash to a paper slip from the auxiliary printer and placed it in plain view before raising her hands away from the keyboard.
I have to secure both stations, the officer said.
Do it, Queen, Etta said. The audit log will show your sequence. He nodded, offended and grateful.
I know my job.
The main console shifted to remote lock. Calder's credential icon grayed out. His name disappeared from the active certification roster and reappeared under suspended operators. The tablet beside the charger displayed a new benefits notification. Employment status under administrative review. Dependent coverage evaluation pending. Pending, the word had learned to smile. Voss reached the tower at 12:20 with two legal officers, a ministry aide carrying a paper folder and no cameras. The fireworks smoke still smeared the window behind Calder's chair. Rafik entered behind her despite security's effort to keep him out. He held his union card up like a warrant and dared someone to create another public problem. Etta remained by the auxiliary station, with her hands visible.
Voss ignored Rafik at first. She set the folder on the console rail.
Calder Ives, she said. You are suspended from all duties pending investigation into unauthorized disclosure, failure to follow ministerial instruction, misuse of classified archive access, and conduct prejudicial to emergency recovery operations. Surrender your harbor credential. Calder uncooked the badge from his belt. The plastic had worn cloudy where his thumb had rubbed it over the years. He placed it on the folder. The badge reader by the door chirped as his access died. Your municipal benefits will be reviewed under disciplinary provisions, Voss continued. You may submit mitigation through counsel.
Say, Agnes, Calder said.
Voss blinked once.
Say, my mother's coverage is leverage.
This is an administrative process.
Say it plain.
Rafik made a low sound, not quite approval. Voss's face set.
Your mother's dependent coverage may lapse as a consequence of your suspension.
You think this makes you noble?
No.
Good. It does not. She stepped closer. You have halted relief traffic, armed our enemies with wartime material, endangered public order, and handed grieving people fragments without context.
The context is attached.
The context is that we were at war.
The context is that the system still can't see what sits in front of it.
Voss's gaze went to Etta.
And you have confessed to possession of stolen state materials.
Etta lifted the paper hash slip between two fingers.
I have documented my access and my part in the code notes. If you charge me, discovery gets wider.
You mistake exposure for protection.
No, Etta said.
No, I learned from him. Exposure is only exposure.
Voss absorbed the line, then turned back to Calder.
You had other channels.
I used one.
You rejected it.
You filed garbage.
I filed cowardice.
The tower quieted around that. Even the legal officer's stylus paused over his tablet.
Calder continued before he could polish the sentence into something safer.
I tried to stop tonight without naming what we did.
You called it a smear.
You were right.
Voss's expression changed again, and for a moment he saw the wartime official inside the minister.
Younger, sleepless, certain the city's survival justified the next intolerable order, then the next.
He wondered whether she carried a private archive of faces, or only outcomes.
He could not know.
He would not grant her either depth or emptiness without evidence.
You will regret this by morning, she said.
I regret it now.
That will not help you, I know.
Rafik stepped forward. The Union wants access to the full packet.
Voss turned on him.
The Union will receive what legal review permits.
The Union received notification through the audit standard your office bragged about for 6 months.
Don't piss on my boots and call it process.
You are obstructing recovery.
My men are alive tonight.
Your men will be unpaid tonight.
Rafik's face tightened.
Yes, they will.
And tomorrow they'll know why.
Voss looked between them, calculating damage.
The calculation itself seemed to age her.
No one leaves the harbor complex until initial statements are taken.
Fine, Calder said. The hours after midnight lost any ceremonial shape. Legal officers occupied the tower canteen with recording tablets and bad coffee. Calder gave his first statement at 1:10 in the morning, then a second at 2, then a clarification at 3:15, when Ministry Council tried to separate the current fault from the archived chain. He refused the separation each time. His language grew plainer from fatigue or choice.
The array is blind. The old tuning helped kill civilian crews. My signature accepted the risk. Tonight's certification would have hidden that.
Etta gave her statement in the far corner.
Voice clipped. Hands folded to keep from typing on the table.
Once, when counsel asked whether Calder had instructed her to steal or retain state materials, she laughed so sharply that the recorder's level spiked.
No, she said. He spent years instructing himself not to know things. He did not instruct me.
Rafik moved between the gates and the tower, carrying worker updates and refusing every ministry attempt to move him to a managed protest area.
At 2:40, he found Calder by the canteen vending machines,
where Calder had failed to make the card reader accept a suspended credential. Without comment, Rafik used his own card and bought 2 paper cups of machine coffee. He handed one to Calder.
"I didn't ask for charity," Calder said.
"Good. It tastes like punishment."
Calder accepted the cup. The coffee scalded his tongue and had the flavor of burnt plastic. Rafik leaned one shoulder against a vending machine. The fight had not left him. It had settled lower.
"My aunt will see that packet?"
"Yes."
"She'll see your name?"
"Yes." "She may come here and slap the skin off your face?"
"I'll stand still. Don't make a performance out of it."
Calder held the coffee with both hands.
"I won't."
Rafik took a drink and grimaced.
"You were late. You tried to dodge."
"Yes."
"You said it when it counted tonight."
Calder searched Rafik's face for comfort and found none.
"Better that way. Comfort would have been another inaccurate record."
"My crew still lose wages," Rafik said.
"I know. Your mother loses coverage, likely."
"That's a hard bill."
"Yes."
Rafik nodded toward the windows, where the street sat black beyond the canteen glass. "Dead men don't pay bills either. Their families do."
Calder drank the terrible coffee.
"I know that too late." "Then keep knowing it."
Rafik pushed away from the machine and returned to the gate channel.
At 4 in the morning, the ministry released its first public statement. Calder read it on an unsecured terminal under supervision. The wording blamed a late-stage technical irregularity and unauthorized archive attachment by personnel under review. It promised commitment to safety, continuity of relief shipments, and respect for all wartime losses. It named no vessels. It named no dead. It named him.
Etta read over his shoulder.
"They're isolating you."
"Yes."
"They'll isolate me next."
"Yes."
"They'll try to isolate the code from the deaths."
"Yes."
She turned away from the screen and pressed the heels of her hands against her forehead. The motion made her seem briefly younger, though nothing about her was young.
"I hate that yes is the only honest answer you have tonight.
I have more."
"Such as?"
"I'm sorry."
She lowered her hands.
"That one is honest. It's also small."
"I know.
Don't spend it like currency."
He set the terminal to sleep.
"I won't."
She studied him then, openly, with the tired severity of someone checking a damaged bridge before deciding whether to cross.
"What will you tell Agnes?"
"The truth I can carry to her apartment. Not all at once. Not in ministry language."
"She believes you kept people alive."
"I did.
Some."
"And some died?"
"Yes."
Etta nodded. Her mouth trembled once and firmed.
"There.
Keep that grammar."
At 5, the observers requested remote access to the packet. Ministry Council objected. The audit standard overrode the objection. Calder watched the transfer complete under 3 independent signatures. Voss had retreated to the administrative wing by then, where lights burned on every floor. He imagined her drafting survival in paragraphs. He knew the skill. He had lived inside it. His own credential remained dead. The badge sat in an evidence sleeve on the console rail, absurd and small. Without it, he could not open the tower stairwell, access the restroom without escort, buy coffee, or call up the maintenance queue he had managed for 11 years. The building had accepted his hands all day and rejected them before dawn. He found no poetry in that, only design. Near 5:30, the rain stopped. No one announced it.
The tower windows simply lost their stipple.
The harbor emerged in layers. First the nearest rail, rust orange under work lights, then the dock apron,
dark with standing water. Then the cranes halted with their hooks high. Then the strait, colder than the sky and almost the same color. Ships waited beyond the breakwater in disciplined rows. Their anchor lights seemed lower than before. Security cleared Calder to leave at 5:50 under escort. Etta had already been told to remain for another statement. She stood near the tower door, with her bag over one shoulder, the storage drive gone into evidence, her hands empty.
"I can call a lawyer," Calder said.
"I already did."
"Who?"
"Someone who dislikes Voss more than she dislikes theft."
"Well, that's specific."
"It's Southgate." He smiled then, barely, and the expression felt cracked from disuse. Etta reached into her pocket and pulled out the folded paper hash slip.
"Copy," she said.
"I made two before they took the printer."
"You shouldn't hand that to me."
"You're suspended, not searched, yet." He accepted the paper. The string of verification words and letters meant little by itself without system access, but it proved the packet had existed in that form at that time, a small anchor against revision. He folded it once and put it in his shirt pocket, not his coat, close enough to feel when he breathed. Etta watched the gesture.
"This doesn't fix us."
"No."
"It doesn't fix them."
"No."
"It doesn't make you brave retroactively."
Her face softened by 1 degree, which in Etta's scale meant weather changing over a long coast. "Get some sleep before you see Agnes."
"I don't know if I can. Lie down anyway.
Procedure helps animals." He gave a tired, unwilling laugh. "You sound like me."
"I know, it's awful."
The escort opened the stairwell. Cold moved up from below. Calder stepped through, then paused with one hand on the rail.
"Etta?"
She waited.
"When you file your supplemental statement, include that I saw the waiver."
"I will."
"And that I signed it."
"I will. And don't write that I failed to understand." Her expression sharpened.
"Write that I failed to name it," Calder said.
Etta held him there with silence, then nodded once.
"That I can write."
He descended. The metal stairs carried him past the levels of the tower he had known by sound more than sight. Operations with its constant low voices, server mezzanine with its chilled mechanical breath, maintenance stores smelling of rubber gaskets and old oil, the landing where smokers had gathered before the building banned flame after the shelling. Each floor required the escort's badge. Each door opened for another man's hand. Calder kept his own hands at his sides. At ground level, dawn had begun without color. 6 in the morning approached. Late autumn pressed cold into the wet concrete and made every puddle hold a clean, hard reflection. The dock apron, loud with expectation the day before, stood nearly empty. A few workers clustered by the gate, speaking low. Rafik stood among them, cap pulled down, paper cup in hand. He saw Calder and lifted the cup a few inches. Not salute, not thanks. Acknowledgement, grim and sufficient. Calder returned it with an open hand. The storm rail where the gull had perched ran along the eastern edge of the pier. No bird waited there now, only rust, salt, and the white mark it had left beneath the place where the system had seen nothing. Calder walked to the rail without asking the escort's permission. The man let him go as far as the painted boundary line and stopped behind him. Across the strait, the convoy remained anchored. Cranes waited with their booms raised. Flags hung wet and slack along the administrative wing. Public screens outside the terminal displayed "safety hold" in calm blue letters, a gentler phrase than the morning deserved, and sharper than the lie it replaced. No fireworks, no speeches audible through glass, no greenwash of certainty across the board. Calder took the folded directive from his coat pocket and held it with the benefits notice open on his tablet. Voss's paper, Agnes's warning, Etta's verification slip against his chest. Procedure, consequence, proof. The old order of his life rearranged. His suspended wristband vibrated once and failed to display the message. Dead credential. Dead access. He almost tapped it against his palm out of habit, then stopped. Some doors would stay closed now. Some should have closed earlier. The water below the rail moved around the pier pilings with a slow, iron sound. Stagnant foam gathered, broke, gathered again. Calder watched a tug beyond the breakwater shift against its anchor line and hold. A waiting ship sent one low horn across the strait. The note traveled through mist and cranes and empty loading lanes, reached the pier diminished but intact, and faded without answer. He had no clean feeling to carry from the tower. The report would not feed Agnes. It would not lift Orison from the bottom or dry the clothes of men who had gone into black water under red outlines. It would not make Etta a child again in a kitchen full of disassembled radios, believing her father's tools served only repair. It stopped one certification. It named one chain. It kept one more lie from hardening into civic architecture before breakfast. That was smaller than redemption. That was larger than silence. Calder folded the benefits notice closed, turned the tablet dark, and placed both hands on the cold rail. The rust roughened his palms. Behind him, the tower's locked doors clicked under other people's credentials. Ahead, anchored ships waited in the gray. The cranes stood motionless over them, patient as questions. Dawn came colder over Saltgate, and the strait held its silence, harsh and uncomforting, but no longer green. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.